Namaste. Good morning, everyone. With this teaching of Advaita, when we go beyond conceptual understanding of non-duality and see its influence in our daily living, what we start noticing, to use a phrase of Joel Goldsmith's, which sums it up beautifully, is that we start rising above the pairs of opposites. We start rising above the pairs of opposites. We find we are no longer polarized as we were before. A simple example would be, whereas in the past we were chasing after pleasures, trying to get pleasure after pleasure after pleasure from life and running away from pain, we were polarized, the polarities of pleasure and pain. When the understanding dawns that life is both pleasure and pain, when the understanding dawns, there's no point running away from pain. We may not like it, but there's no point running away from it. At that point, something very important happens, which Maharaj called the turning away from the self, the small self, the me. So when the me now turns around to face life as it happens without wanting something else, but is providing itself the opportunity to rest in what is, not what should be and not what could be, then this marks the dawn of the rising above the pairs of opposites. And because in daily living, not only events that come to us, but people, which brings forth the pairs of opposites of me and the other. This same quality of being present, keeping my judgments and opinions aside, and allowing people to be who they are and express themselves, in that, once again, I find I am turning away from the small self. Earlier, I was very invested in my views and opinions of people. I was embroiled in this most important pair of opposites because the natural equilibrium of me and the other had become me versus the other. When I find my boat of relationships does not get rocked like it used to earlier, is not as fragile as it used to be earlier, then I know I am rising above this pair of opposites. The primary pair of opposites, the source of a lot of trouble for the little me, is good and evil. A belief in good and evil to the extent that one loses sight of the fact that there is only one source from which the manifestation has appeared. When I start seeing the hand of God behind everything in my life, and I no longer label people, situations, and so on as good and evil, because there is nothing apart from God, you see. There is only one power. Its polarities in duality we call good and evil. The good and evil pertains to the me. As my teacher Rameshji used to often say, when the smallpox was eradicated, it was a big achievement for humanity, no doubt. But nobody sees it from the point of view of the smallpox virus. So it is all me. When we see this hand of God behind everyone and all events, we are no longer getting polarized anymore. Yes, there are some things we use our judgment on. We may not like something and we take the necessary action. But because we are not so emotionally embroiled now, we find that we are able to exercise discretion, objectivity, and neutrality in the situation. Because the me is no longer trying to preserve itself out of fear, if we see our actions through the day and what we say, the things we say to people, the thoughts in our mind, we will be quite astonished to find how many battles we were fighting in the course of the day to defend what we thought was most precious to us. And that is why I mentioned in a recent talk that just once, in a certain situation with a certain person whom there is conflict with, just tell that person you are right. You may know for yourself that the person is not right, but just concede. This is not a lie. This, a very big shift happens when one can do this. Why is it not a lie? Because that person is speaking their truth based on their conditioning and their genetics, which form their nature. So they are right according to their point of view. According to my point of view, they are not right. So I have conceded this point. And what happens is I sense such a big relief that I no longer have to defend myself or force my point of view on the other anymore. And I rest in the knowing. I say what I have to say. I express myself if I need to. And then my mantra becomes, so be it. I cannot guarantee the outcome. I cannot control what the other person thinks and feels about what I said. All this while I was trying to control, control, and control. And in that control, I was perhaps unconsciously becoming violent of thought and deed. So this truly is the teaching of the pairs of opposites, and how they get transcended, not by doing, but by simply exploring, investigating, understanding that the physical eyes see the dualistic world, whereas the single eye sees singularity. When this starts happening, one can consider that the third eye, the eye of Shiva, the single eye, has now started operating in my daily living and is now shining its light on situations, events, circumstances, and people. This is the blessing of the teaching. This is the Lord Ganpati, which is nothing but the vibration of the third eye, which forms the trunk. Ganpati as the absolute. And then we find we are living in the same world, so to speak. Our daily living is the same. We still go to work, still meet friends, still do this, still do that. But we are no longer being pounded between the pairs of opposites. When pleasures come, they don't give us a high anymore like they used to. Yet they give a feeling of pleasure. And similarly, with pain, our attention is focused on dealing with the pain, not on the whys. Why me? Why did this happen to me? What did I do wrong? Was it something in the past life? So on and so forth. Because life does not make sense all the time. Most of the time it doesn't. Things happen. Those who are curious to explore Joel Goldsmith's teachings, there are many books. One that I am quite fond of is called The Thunder of Silence. I'll read out two or three lines, which I found very beautiful. Nobody can attain the Edenic state while he is hypnotized by the knowledge of good and evil. This can only come as the fruitage of relinquishing not only all judgment and condemnation, but even all praise. When we are no longer under the hypnotic influence of the pairs of opposites, the world has no power to enslave us. What does this mean? No power to enslave us means our thinking mind, which is the source of all our troubles, moving us away from what is and creating imaginary situations, scenarios, and what if situations, is no longer functioning like it used to. It is no longer the devil, so to speak. Therefore, there is no power now to enslave us, which is the suffering which the Buddha would point to, with the annihilation of the thinking mind, you'll be surprised when you look back if you have been influenced by this teaching in some way, maybe over the last 2 years, 2 months, 10 years, whatever it be. You will be surprised to see the difference in your thinking now than when it was prior to the teaching. You see, it's like it creeps into your blood. You can no longer see things the old way. When we remove world hypnotism or the belief in two powers from ourselves or any individual, we are free. Then, in that day, we shall have a new name written on our foreheads, a three-letter word which can be divided into two words to read, I am. That is the truth. I am. Not I was or I will be. I am becomes a state of continuity and eternal ising and amming. And the result is that the hypnotism disappears. What does this mean in very simple words? When my thinking mind, which is now destroyed so that there's nothing of the nature of hatred, malice, jealousy, envy, blame, condemnation, guilt, shame, and so on and so forth, when all that has been cleared out from the mind, I find I am resting more and more in simply being. I am means simply being. I am. Not some trance-like state or some big spiritual experience as such, but I find my mind is no longer dancing the jig like it used to. I face life moment to moment. And so when the Spanish poet Paul Eluard said, there is another world, but it is this one. My sense is this world is now a world where I live knowing that the nature of the world is duality of every conceivable kind, but because the sense of doership has been given up and the one power behind it all has been seen, I no longer convert this duality to dualism. I no longer convert the me and the other to me versus the other. And so I find my vision is now healed back. It is a coming back out of the hypnosis, which I was reincarnating to day after day after day by blaming people, situations, things, and also blaming God. And I rest in the knowing that there's this one power which knows how to take care of its creation. I live a simple life, wishing no harm on people, and more importantly, wishing no harm upon myself. It's a two-way street, you see. I no longer judge people harshly, and I no longer judge myself harshly. When I see flaws in the other, I know that I have my own flaws. It's just that the flaws are different based on factors beyond our control. You see, in the Sufi tradition, there are different streams. They are called silsilas. I mean, the oldest stream, which is the Qadri silsila, there's a tenet for anyone who's on this path that whoever comes to you, bar none. When I say whoever comes to you, I mean, let's say, someone of authority in this silsila, in this order, someone who is considered a sage, a peer, whatever we call the title. When that person presents themselves in front of such a person, they cannot be turned away, no matter what. Why? Because they have been taught whoever presents themselves before you is an aspect of God and will quite certainly have some very great qualities beyond the appearance. And that is why when I was sitting with such a master for a long time, and he would tell me in Hindi, jo bhi mere samne aaye, mera soch hai ki ye mere se achha hai. Whoever comes before me, the knowing is already established that this person is greater than me. Now, how does that translate? I saw this with my own eyes very recently. I was sitting with him and someone smelling dirty, filthy, most likely a vagabond on the street, came into the room and asked for a cigarette. And I saw that this master's approach was unchanged. Heard him out, offered him the cigarette, and then politely asked him to take leave. And we find in our lives, we turn away from people, turn away from friends, turn away from siblings when they do and say things we don't like. We block people on WhatsApp. On this path, there is no turning away. Yes, we have our preferences. There are certain kinds of people we like, certain kinds we don't resonate with that much. It doesn't mean we have to suffer people's company. But we are no longer accusing and blaming them for being who they are. Therein lies the difference. And then lies not only our peace, but the peace. You see, peace can be very tangible. You can sense it in a room. I may not like someone the way they present themselves or the way they vibrate, so to speak. But when there is the simple allowing of them to be, there's peace. I'd like to read out one email that came to me. And thereafter, if anyone would like to share something or ask something, they are welcome to. Greetings. Being lies between overdoing and underdoing. We function based on the concepts and the ideas that have certain definitions, expectations, and so on. As one starts incorporating this teaching, the reaction to defend myself dissolves. Let alone the need to defend the ego, even the need to participate in the conversation reduces. Or I would say it fluctuates. The role-based conversations, for example, as a teacher or as a mother or as a daughter, are retained. Silence or mourn happens effortlessly. Retaining the role-based conversations is most of the times an effort. As one starts incorporating this teaching and the change begins to take place, process of filtration and the process of purification starts taking place. Words, ideas, unnecessary conversation, unnecessary participation in the external drama reduces significantly and effortlessly. I would like to know your views in the light of Advaita on this. You see, this is very beautiful. As one starts incorporating this teaching and the change begins to take place, the process of filtration and the process of purification starts taking place. You see, this is quite literal. This is a process of purification. If thine eye be single, thy whole body will be full of light. Isn't that purification? Which is when the intellect starts operating in our life and not this monotonous, mundane thinking mind which has been governing our life all along, then one could say the thinking is being purified. There is lesser drama in life. You will find that in a given conversation, if you're at a table and there are people sharing their views, you will find maybe just about motivation to share yours and perhaps even not that. Because the need to convince the table of your point of view has dropped. There is only one sentence here which I feel needs to be looked at, where it says, role-based conversations, for example, as a teacher or as a mother, as a daughter, and so on, are retained. And in retaining the role-based conversations, most of the times it is an effort. You see, this actually, if it is an effort, needs to be looked at because effort implies doership. This email very clearly is written by someone who has been deeply moved by the teachings. When these things are observed, that I'm no longer embroiled in conversations and dramas and so on, the conclusion is that witnessing is happening more and more. Witnessing, that most beautiful word, the flow of life is being witnessed more and more. But if I find that a particular role is an effort, then most likely it is linked to the sense of doership. Yes, one can understand an effort in the sense that anything is an effort compared to pure being. But we have to live our lives. others depend on us, we depend on others. And so we find whether we are at work, in our office, where we play the role of either a worker or a boss or whatever it may be, it is now becoming more and more effortless, because now I have seen that it may appear that I am the doer, but the understanding is that I am not. It is that force, that power, which is getting the work done through me. And so it, in that sense, my effort, my personal effort starts reducing, and I allow it to flow. Yes, by and by, the preference is for quietness, silence, whatever you may call it, when things are at rest. But this teaching is very pragmatic. It cannot and does not exclude the mundane world, the material world. It is embraced. Our peace of mind has to be found through it, not away from it. All right. If anyone would like to ask something or share something, they can do so now. Yes, Harit.
Hello, sir. Good morning. I'm Harit Bhak. I'm 17 years old. And sir, I would like to share a small learning that after like such limited time in this world, like
that's sweet.
So I initially came across your channel through Sai Baba Devotee Speaks, and by God's grace, ardent devotees of Baba. And I would like to refrain from using I and me, so I'm apologizing if the grammar is a little iffy. So please, you understand.
Please use I and me. Let's be normal about things.
Okay, fine, sir. I'll use it. So, sir, ever since I started following you and your channel, and I've almost like binge watched all of your videos. And I do not watch anything else. I don't watch Netflix, nothing. My only focus is work and Baba. That's it. Literally nothing else. And even more than work is Baba. So you know, nothing affects me anymore. Like, even if I like someone, I don't get them. It's Baba as well. Nothing, literally, like, since childhood, I've noticed this pattern that every night, by God's grace, I've never gone to sleep with no peace of mind. Like, every night I go to bed with peace of mind, knowing that whatever is happening due to Baba's will. Whatever has happened is happening and will happen. And if I try to do something, I'm just going to mess it up. Because, as you said, in the one video where you were reading out Joel Goldsmith's words, where he said that I have messed up my life this far. Now, please, you take over. So that is what I'm trying to follow. And meditation also, I by God's grace, I'm meditating on Baba only. And in that channel, Sai Baba Devotee Speaks, there is I who has done that Naam Jap. So it lasts for about 1 hour. And in that, I observe my thoughts, whatever come. And I only have two thoughts, which come in a constant pattern. And sometimes I am in the state where I have no thought, and it's only Baba. So, sir, I just wanted your thoughts and opinions that am I going wrong somewhere or am I on the right path? Because quite often I have this thoughts that, you know, the only thing that bothers me is not any external situation. It's just that, am I doing the right thing? Have I done my today's meditation correctly? Is Baba happy? Those are the only thoughts. Like, nothing else. And even if someone comes to me like for advice, many people do, by God's grace, again, I am not giving them advice. It is just Baba who's doing it. I am literally nothing. I am genuinely nothing. So it is just that they receive the same thing, just to have faith and patience and just to trust whatever is happening for the best. And obviously, then they come across your videos. And I think my one friend is also there in this meeting too, which is lovely to see.
Yeah. Harit, that's very beautiful what you have shared. You asked if you're doing anything wrong. I can only say you're setting yourself up to become a very boring boyfriend for someone.
Very true.
No Netflix, no this, no that.
Very true, sir. Very true, sir.
See, there's one thing with such kind of surrender, Harit, to Baba in this case. You see, surrender to a form is surrender to the source, because the form is the embodied source.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. But this question which you have, am I doing the right meditation and all? you will find these questions will no longer arise, because then the realization is even this meditation is being done by Baba.
Yes.
I am not doing it.
No.
So this self-doubt, this concern that am I doing it right? Am I doing enough? A stage will be reached where that all also is surrendered to Baba.
Okay.
Then there will be no self-doubt. Regarding advice, you are very young, and it's something quite interesting that people come to you for advice. There's one golden rule which I try my best to follow, which my teacher would mention in satsang all the time. Never give advice unless asked for.
Very true, very true.
And why? Because if you give advice without being asked for it, there are two pointers here. One is it could be based on a sense of doership.
Yes.
And I know what is right for such a person, and so I'm going Correct. To give advice. How do we know?
We don't.
Our advice is based on our conditioning, our genetics, our nature, which God made. It doesn't mean it is the right advice. You see, so that is the only suggestion that regarding giving advice, of course, a parent-child relationship is very different, because the parents are the child's first gurus are the parents. We are not talking about that dynamic.
Yes.
We are talking about other kinds of relationships.
Okay.
So it's, you see, one thing is, Harit, at this young age of 17, this kind of immersion you have in the life spiritual could not be your doing.
No, it's not.
Could not be your doing. Just see for yourself that you don't miss out on the juice of life. You see, because life is meant to be lived. Life is meant to be experienced. The colors of life, various situations, various relationships. And so allow what has to happen. Because that is not going to water down your sadhana. That is you at your core. That is your nature. So have that much trust, have that much faith, and you will find it so beautiful to live a life in surrender and without the sense of doership attached to it. Because you have a long way to go, hopefully.
Yes.
And allow that to be a beautiful expression of the divine.
Okay.
Where are you based?
So Mumbai.
Okay. Mumbai. You haven't come home, right, at any time?
So you know, again, as you said, that again, Baba's will, like, I remember I asked Sangeeta madam that about your address, because my phones were switched, and madam replied, hope you will come today. So, you know, I was thinking that the amount of time I've asked for the address, madam is also annoyed that he's not going to come. I'm 100% sure. So let me write to him, hope he will come today. And you know the funny part, I didn't come that day. So my God, yes, God willing, next talk, hopefully.
If it is meant to be, it will happen. I was just curious. Exactly. Okay, yeah. Anything else you'd like to ask?
Nothing, sir, nothing. According to you, they just wanted your views, sir.
According to me, you're doing quite fine.
Okay, sir.
That would be an understatement.
That's more than enough, sir. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Okay.
I'm here.
Thank you. You too. Yes, Deepthi.
Hi, Gautam, sir. This is Deepthi from Melbourne. So my sincere, heartfelt thanks to you. I still can't imagine that I am live talk with you. One day when I come to India and Mumbai, I wish I can attend your face-to-face talk. So thank you for making my part of Advaita and non-doership, like pakka pakka ho chuka hai.
Pakka pakka.
So no doubt in that, sir. And the books you suggested, Power of Now, Autobiography of Yogi, and the latest book that I read was The Gospel of Ramakrishna by Yogi publication. So that has helped me a lot in the non-doership part. And my question to you is, like, I know you have told in your talk that just keep holding on to your stump, which is Baba for me, like Sai Baba. But sometimes that urge of and I'm following other spiritual paths as well. Like you said, जहां से आपको जो अच्छा मिलता है, whatever you can grab the good from anywhere, take it, hold on to your thumb. But sometimes that urge of living guru, it still come bubbling up on my mind and sometimes feel restless and again sit with Baba and get my answer. So just how to calm down that I know Baba is still my living guru and I am following teaching of him in each and every path, plus your teaching are helping me on my daily living. So yeah, that's my question, how to calm down that icha, desire.
Why you want to calm it down? Let what has to arise.
But what if it makes your mind restless and sometime you start doubting on yourself that am I on the other spiritual path that I'm following is Brahma Kumaris. So, but not everything that they told me I am following. So sometime I find myself stuck in the middle. I am a married female of two adult kids. And so sometimes you just feel stuck.
Yes. So see, Dipti, this is an important point which I was waiting for it to come up and it's come up.
Yeah.
You see, when I say that whatever good you find in other teachings and all, by all means access them. As long as they are not creating confusion, as long as they are supporting, they are support to your life's experience, your understanding, your surrender to your master.
Yeah.
You see, this is something you have to ask yourself. Now, I was very fortunate in this regard. I had a living master and I found that no matter whom I met, whether it was yogis, it was spiritual masters, big organizations, everything, I was going back to him because my peace of mind, what he spoke about was a validation of my own life's experience. So I didn't have this confusion. Okay. I didn't have this, is something else for me better or not? So I was very fortunate because many people go through this, you see. So you have to, this, you see, wanting to be calmed down means the mind is not calm, as you say. So something is bothering you.
Yeah.
You see, now that bothering could be just something which you're feeling guilty of, that if I am surrendered to Baba, why am I listening to Brahma Kumaris? That is your own mind's dialogue.
Yes. Plus, the teaching of Brahma Kumaris are sometimes got very strict, which can bother my home, my grahastha life.
Yes. So now, Dipti, knowing this, has to do precisely that which she thinks and feels she should do.
Okay.
Okay. Because she knows what is troubling her. She knows what is taking away her peace of mind. And she has to take a decision. Else,
yes,
it will keep happening.
Yes.
But now Dipti has one criteria. One criteria we all take for granted because it's too simple. That criteria is, where is Dipti's peace to be found? When Dipti asks herself, what is taking away my peace and what is giving me my peace? And when Dipti sticks to this one criteria, she will find automatically nature, the universe, life taking its course and making her settle in that which is a source of peace and going away from that which is disturbing the peace. You still take the good things you have learned, things which have influenced you, have given you insights, all that is still received. That which is taking it away, Dipti has the courage, the strength to now look at that, investigate it, and decide for herself, is this something I want in my life or not? And is not going to feel guilty. Why? Because I am not the doer. No guilt, no shame, no judgment.
No opinion for my own self.
Yes. So just sit back today or tomorrow for 15-20 minutes and just keep this in your thought and mind and ask yourself this very simple question, and the answer will be astonishingly simple too, that you are guaranteed.
Yeah, it was so simple, Gautam, I think. Maybe you made it so simple.
No,
I
the
got
mind
my
tends
answer.
to complicate all this, you see. The mind trips on itself all the time. It creates this maze and it gets lost in the maze, the labyrinth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank
Okay.
you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Barbara.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me? Hello.
I finally see you.
Yes. And I finally made it with Sangeeta's help. I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for everything. The teaching and the teacher have totally changed my life.
You know, I often repeat this when my mother's teacher, when anyone would tell him thank you, he would say thank you is like your left hand thanking your right hand. It is not required.
I know, but it's nice to say.
It is. It's nice to hear it too.
And it's nice to feel it.
Yes.
Gratitude.
Thank you, Barbara. Anything else?
And I'm really looking forward to coming to India. And
yes,
meet.
That would be great. I look forward to seeing you too, in the flesh.
Thank you. Oh, I won't say it again.
Okay. Yes, Rahul.
Hi, Gautam. How are you?
I'm good. You're in Germany, right? From what I
know. Yes.
Still there?
Yeah. Okay. Happening. Many of my dreams are coming true. Thanks.
Wow. You're blessed.
Thank you. One of your advice that you gave me, that just leave it to the Lord's feet, whatever your wishes are. And so I find myself in the position of more leadership roles kind of thing. And my question is very materialistic, or let's say professional, because you've been in that world of leadership. I think I remember seeing a video where you said at a very young age, you were asked to lead a company. And my question to you is, how did you manage different people with different mentalities, all moving them to one direction, or like guiding them with the additional pressure of time and to deliver?
Yeah, it's a good question. You see, Rahul, I was only 24 years old when I was placed in a situation where I had 30 staff members who were all older than me, and I had to lead them. And I can truly say I didn't do anything. I was nervous, I was scared, I was timid, I was an introvert, and I found myself in this situation. But one thing, Rahul, I realized that generally, by and by, people liked me. And I wondered why, because I was not doing anything as such to be liked. I realized people didn't perceive me as a threat. People were not intimidated by me. Not just my age, but perhaps my personality. I was, you could say, an amiable chap, you see. And I have found through the years, since the age of 24 to now, when I'm 52, that when you don't intimidate people, you don't try to force your views on them, you don't try to control them, you allow them space to be an expression of themselves. And yet, of course, being a leader, you need to put them in check where you feel right. But you are no longer targeting an individual. You are no longer holding an individual accountable in that sense for his deeds. You see pure potential in people. You focus on their good points, less on their weak points. You have to use your judgment as a leader, so there should be no distress on the organization in terms of a goal not being met, and so on and so forth. But when you approach people in this way, they relax, Rahul, they relax. They don't feel this pressure to perform in that sense. Because, you know, the pressure is to be a certain type of individual. You take that away from people and say, look, these are your strengths. Focus on them. Focus on the job. You allow people to be an expression of their nature. I find that at work, this works very beautifully. And you know that there are bound to be mistakes. Nobody is perfect. Things may affect the organization. And we learn from them. you also learn from your reaction to your staff members' mistakes, where you were having erroneous thinking, so to speak. It's all a revelation. And that is why my teacher loved people who were engaged in work, because he wanted to know how the teaching impacted work, because work is relationships, not just staff members, suppliers, suppliers, clients, clients, competition. Everything is a relationship. This work is the breeding ground of diverse people from diverse cultures, diverse backgrounds coming together. This coming together is an act of God. People have been brought together, not just for work. This is what I understood. It may appear that we are brought together for work and only work, but we are brought together because of dinanubandhan. It is a give and take, learning about life, learning about relationships, learning about domination, subjugation, seeing how my ego plays out its patterns, its fears, its insecurities. And the leader who allows people to think they are leading is, according to me, a successful leader. Ultimately, nobody is an employee, nobody is an employer. We tend to lose fact in the corporate world. We lose this fact in the corporate world because we are so entrenched in role playing, in power games. You know, the biggest joke is in a guru-disciple relationship, the disciple considers the guru his or her master. Actually, the master is the servant of the disciple. I am not making light of this. The master is the servant of the disciple in what way? Because the consciousness of the master is serving the disciple. The consciousness of the master is spreading light, giving light to the disciple on their life's journey. So who is serving whom? You see, this world of appearances is so mischievous. It is so devious. It is so hypnotic. All right. Sorry, I hope I could answer your question, Rahul. Are you there?
I muted myself by mistake. Yes. Thank you, Gautam.
You're in software, right?
So now I've got into an animation school where I'll be learning how to be a producer.
Okay.
So it is a leadership role. Yeah.
All the best.
Thank you so much.
As my teacher would say, success and failure are not yours. All right. Yes, Drake.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm very grateful to be here. I really appreciate what you've shared, and peace of mind and daily living is really inspiring. That one time, everything that happens is God's will. That was really a game changer for me. So I guess after this talk tonight, I was hoping that you could teach me more about doership. Like when I see my ego coming and I want to take control and control the outcome, and I, you know, I don't think it's going to happen, like the thinking mind versus the working mind, like what can I do to like kind of get back into a place of being connected to being?
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, the ego, when it gets involved in the involvement of being involved.
Yeah.
That is why my teacher would say the ultimate question is, what can I do to have the total and final understanding that I am not the doer?
Yeah.
What can I do to have the total and final understanding that I am not the doer? And the answer is in the question itself. If you're not the doer, there's nothing you can do. It has to happen. So you see the ego trying to overthink this process, tripping over itself, not wanting to be involved in the involvement and so on and so forth, is still based on doership. But there's a very big shift here, Drake. Now I'm aware. Earlier, I was not aware of the mechanics of the ego, how lost I was in the whole situation. Now I'm aware. So that wish not to be involved is a very earnest wish. And that is very beautiful. And the only answer I have is allow it to happen. whatever teachings you come across, whatever you have absorbed, let that do its job. Let that play its role. And it will play its role. The ego just has to step back. Yes, it makes one more aware of one's patterns, thought processes. It is only on this field of awareness that this teaching sinks in. It doesn't need you to do too much about it. This teaching is a relaxation. It is a witnessing. It is being aware of what were my thought processes, what were they based on, and revealing all this. This whole my will versus God's will, me being the doer, others being the doer, it's all a revelation. And in that revelation itself, the veil is lifted. It doesn't need you to lift the veil. The veil is being lifted for you by the teaching. It is a natural process. There will be flip-flops. There will be moments of pleasure. There will be moments of pain. There will be moments of peace. There will be moments when that peace has gone because old conditioning has kicked back in. It is just a process which one has to witness, and it will unfurl and unfold.
Mm-hmm. That sounds wonderful. Yes. And there's something about like faith that, you know, it's really in your own best interest to just let God make the decisions and let the guide your life. Because I have an attachment to my family business. Like, my mom was going to pass away and there's people around, and I'm not that interested in it, and she knows it, but I still keep going. I just want it to be, the transition to be done well, you know, for our family.
Yes, of course. And one has to be sensitive also, right, Drake, in that sense, because if you know that everyone is playing out their role in the family, a degree of sensitivity comes in, that everyone has their perspective, their views, their motivations. And so I try my best not to trample on other people's feelings. Yeah. I may know I'm right in a certain situation, but I'm yet more gentle about it because there's more awareness. Mm-hmm. It is then this faith which you speak about is the faith in knowing that whatever the outcome, I have given my best, and I allow what has to happen with grace, effortless, simple, and relaxed grace, which will allow this outcome to unfold. Events have already been set in motion. They will take the course they are meant to. And that's the most beautiful space. I'm operating now from the space of faith. And based on my nature, my sensitivities, doing my best.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, Drake. Thank you. We'll take one last question and then we'll have to keep the other questions for the next Zoom. Sorry. Yes, Farida.
Gautam, it was just pure chance that my husband forwarded a PDF file to me. I downloaded it. It sounded interesting. I downloaded it. It's called Mahashakti Awakenings.
Uh-huh.
Santosh Sachdeva. It didn't strike me. I just downloaded, started reading. And then suddenly I came on this paragraph where she says her three children were also on this, have gone into the three paths. One of them, and I read Gautam Sachdeva with Palsekar, Ramesh Palsekar. I was quite fascinated. I said, just imagine this comes my way. And I'm about halfway through the book. I am totally enamored by it. And is your mother with you, or is she staying elsewhere? Or
No, she is with me. She'd love to hear your comments on her book, I'm sure.
Is there any way I could meet her? Or I read somewhere there's a following, so I just ticked. I said, okay, follow.
I can ask her on your behalf. She now usually meets only students of the breaths that she practices.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, but yeah. I can check. You could send me a mail, Farida, on this.
You know, Gautam, I did send a mail on this, but I don't know if I'm sending it on the right mail. It says team at the end, info at Gautam Sach.
Yes, that's right. I have not seen mails for the last few days, so
okay, that's
I'll take a look at it.
Okay, and or is there some way I can be in touch with Sangeeta and send her my contact or something?
No, it's okay. If you send the mail, we'll get back to you.
Okay, okay. And I'm really, really happy that I've got to you. Because after Ramesh's passing, I did feel a kind of void. Not that I don't practice too much, in fact, no meditation, no nothing. But I just feel it keeps me grounded. It's given me direction, better understanding of myself. I'm just grateful about it. And I'm really happy that I know it was by chance that I met you and you gave me your email.
You met Rameshji a few times. You had gone for satsangs, is it?
Yes, yes. I had gone between 2012 and then after that, my staying in Bombay was not at least 4 or 5 years. I was quite regular.
No, he passed in 2009.
Before 2004. That. 2004, I met him.
First. Unless he was giving satsangs after his passing, which I don't know about.
Sorry, I'm saying it wrong. 2004. Somebody told me about him in 2004. And then we were traveling too much, out of Bombay too much. But that time, of course, no Zoom, nothing.
Yes.
But, I've read quite a few of his books. And Nisargadatta's also.
You know, sometimes I would dream of Ramesh giving satsang and I'm like in the dream saying, what the hell, how is this still going on, you know, after you've gone away?
I wish that would happen to me.
No, but you see, there's an important point here, Farida. Satsang is truly eternal. Satsang is a stepping out, in a sense, without sounding too esoteric, stepping out of the space-time dimension. And the reason is because satsang literally translates as the company of truth, the company of truth, which we tap into, touch upon in our daily living. And truth, as we know, is eternal. It is not that which comes and goes. And so satsangs are eternal in that sense. It is ongoing. It truly is ongoing. It is so beautiful. I mean, words are not enough. This whole aspect of satsang is quite underrated, if you ask me. All right. So we'll just sit in silence for a minute or so, and I will see if I can change my settings to look at all of you. So just so you know that I'm trying to follow a pattern of giving talks at my home once a month and talks on Zoom once a month. So it falls into a certain rhythm, hopefully, and we'll see where that goes and what God's will is. Thank you.